From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
So many things that I observed and noted and sometimes even photographed but did not understand. Things like brightly patterned beetles methodically pulling a dead chipmunk underground until it vanished, or a wasp with an elaborate thread-like device on her posterior that she seemed to use to bore into bark. They've been explained to me in absentia by today's guest, who has a special gift for not just science and nature, but also for the written word. He is Bernd Heinrich, prolific author of best-selling books like Winter World, Mind of the Raven, and Why We Run, an entomologist, a professor emeritus of biology from the University of Vermont, an elite ultramarathoner, and a man who is at most at home in a cabin he built on 600 acres of western Maine forest. I mention the at-home part because Heinrich's latest book, his 18th if I'm counting correctly, is called The Homing Instinct, Meaning and Mystery in Animal Migration. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the program, Bernd. How are you?
Thank you very much, Margaret. Yeah, I'm happy to be on.
Yes, welcome from the woods. I live in the woods too, so from woods to woods. You know, your books always seem to come at just the right time for me. Thank you very much. I had just read The Homing Instinct when the first flicker sort of reappeared in my yard early this spring, and he made a beeline. I guess, I don't know if a flicker can technically make a beeline, but he made a beeline to the spot near my house where every year in the warm weather there's a giant anthill that eventually forms. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why is that? How does he know there will be ants there? Anyway, so I thought, tell me a little bit about how did this book come to be, and was it observations like that that, you know, made you wonder too?
Well, certainly observations like that make me wonder a lot. And speaking of flickers, I had one make a hole in my cabin and nested there 2 years ago.
Ah.
And I watched him from up close. And matter of fact, I was wondering if the flicker would come back this year, too. And once I heard some scratching in there again, and I think he or she or both may have, but they haven't nested there yet. So it's interesting that you would bring up a flicker, but, you know, that brings up the whole topic of bird migration, which is, of course, very central to the homing instincts, homemaking and migration and navigation. And all of these things are, you know, extremely interesting. And of course, they were for me because I'm a comparative biologist and I've studied bees a lot. And so, you know, I make comparisons with other animals. So it's been bubbling up there for quite a while. I could go on and on, but you probably want to answer that specific question.
Yes. So, and at this time in your life, you seem to be so prolific, so many books. The previous one, Life Everlasting, seems like it just came out. And yet here's another one already. You know, here's the homing instinct. So you're always multitasking, are you, up there in the woods?
Yes, I'm always multitasking. I mean, the thing is, you know, the flicker or whatever only comes by once in a while. And so if you're going to be just watching some one phenomenon, you know, you might be very lucky to see it and then have to wait a long time again. So, you know, something, so at some time I would be very intensively watching one thing and then it's gone for months or years, and in the meantime, I do something else that's interesting. So I'm, you know, basically interested in all kinds of things.
Of course.
And so I'm usually doing about at least three books at the same time, it seems like. You know, I had actually had a draft of The Homing Instinct even before I had Life Everlasting, and I just thought it would be, the Life Everlasting one would be very easy to do and short. So I thought I would try to get that one in there first. But, of course, in the meantime, It turned out to be much longer than I anticipated. much more. So that's the way things go.
Yeah. You say in the new book, you say, the minute dimensions of some animals' brains are as astounding as the homing capacity of some of their owners. So what are some of the motivations for homing? Like, why do animals and insects home? And, you know, kind of what causes that at different times of year or life?
Well, I was looking at a very broad perspective with regard to homing. It seems like almost everything I was thinking about eventually led back to home. And so, or be related to homing. And, I mean, when you look at it from a broad and more distant perspective, then, you know, you could even talk about homing in plants. Basically everything relates to the life of organisms relates to being in the right place.
Right.
So homing is ultimately related to being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And all of life depends on that. So the more I was looking into it, the more it seemed like everything was related. And so obviously there are many disciplines involved here, and I think in the scientific literature it's all kind of fragmented and split up into many different topics. And I just wanted to bring it together so one sees the totality. And I was looking even at myself having issues about homing and returning to where I wanted to be and where I had grown up and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, well, you know, that's exactly what birds do. That's what many animals do. And they remember where they had grown up, where they were born, and go back there. It's a good place because obviously they were successful, so they're going
right.
to go back there.
Right.
And, yeah.
So the Phoebes, for instance, I think you mm-hmm. mentioned them in the book, and I've observed in my home, I've observed for 28 seasons that mm-hmm. in the spring mm-hmm. they come and they nest mm-hmm. on the same light fixture above one of my mm-hmm. sheds. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it is what they do, and I know it's not mm-hmm. the same bird for 28 years, but this mm-hmm. is, as you say, it's mm-hmm. A tradition that's mm-hmm. provoked by, that it's caused success in the past, yeah?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
they keep on doing it. If it works, keep on doing it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And the nest site, especially if it, birds, of course, learn the nest site. First of all, there's evolutionary results that they generally choose more or less the right habitat, the right place, and make the right kind of nest. But there's learning as well with respect to the location. I mean, for example, if the geese in a bog nest on the shore and the coyotes keep raiding them, pretty soon one will nest on the beaver lodge and it won't
right.
be raided on, and then they're going to be avoiding the shore. So there's many of those experience that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. And so besides nesting, what are some of the other motivations, so to speak, for animals or insects kind of finding their way home? I mean, for food, for instance, or other reasons for kind of homing?
Well, it depends on, you know, what precisely we're talking about with respect to homing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's homemaking or returning home. I mean, I was looking at bees, for example. They have to go out and forage. So
right.
where they're getting food, in a sense, involves homing mechanisms,
mm-hmm.
using the landmarks and using the location of the sun and having a time sense in order to be able to interpret the direction from the sun. They have to home in on the location, for example, where they have found food, and then they have to home in to their real home, their hive, in order to return. And this is very similar to what we do as well. We you know, we're not very good homers, but we can use, we do use landmarks, but, you know, there are huge gradations of capability, you know, and differences in senses. We don't have the magnetic sense, so that we can't use that. But many birds, of course, we now know, have magnetic sense, so they can use magnetic orientation to get at least a certain direction, and maybe even location as well. Turtles do it, and many insects do it as well. Hmm. And then, you know, using the sun as a compass and landmarks from up close, basically anything that shows up in the environment, you know, in a sense, I suppose, using stellar orientation, using the stars, as many birds do, is using landmarks in a sense. It's using some feature in the environment to orient by. Of course, if the stars are moving, that makes it more complex.
Yes, the shifting landscape.
Exactly. Take account of the shifting landscape.
Yeah.
So that makes it also fascinating.
So as a variation on homing, and this is something that, you know, even people, anybody, it could be a gardener like many of my listeners, or someone who lives in an old house as I do, may have observed that some kinds of insects kind of aggregate, like they all come to the same place at one time, like aphids you might see, or Asian lady beetles, or tent caterpillars. So in the new book from the section "Getting to a Good Place," which was a wonderful title for a chapter, tell us about what's going on when insects do that, when they sort of aggregate.
I mentioned the tent caterpillars starting off in that chapter, I believe, and they are in the same place because the eggs were deposited in one bunch by the moth, by the female moth. But then when they hatch out, the caterpillars continue to stay as a group together for quite a while as they're growing up. And initially, that is apparently, at least it functions that they can make themselves a little greenhouse and stay warm in the spring. They were just hatching out of the egg a couple of weeks or a week or so ago here in Maine, and they now make their little tents, and they're little like little greenhouses. There's no wind there, the cooling factor is reduced, and heat input, and that's where they stay when they're digesting food. So that increases their rate of digestion and metabolism and growth, and reduces the vulnerable period as caterpillars. So, yeah, they stay together and keep making the tent and enlarging it. So these are so their tent is their home, and they go back and forth to it from the leaves as they feed on the leaves, deplete the food near them. They go further and further, and they presumably use threads. Find, you know, lines to orient by as they go back and forth and sort of have a little highway. Of course, aphids now, you know, they multiply in any one place.
They sure do.
So here are nymphs and adults and the offspring together. But they have to get to green plants to be able to suck the phloem sap and so they have to disperse. Of course, their powers of flight are so feeble that they can't really have much choice where they go. But, you know, I don't know if you want me to explain what they do, but I think it's quite ingenious, really.
Sure.
It involves morphology. For example, when it's time to disperse, they grow wings. And then they just launch themselves into the air and basically drift by the wind, drift up or maybe feebly fly and then descend later on someplace much far away. But chances are some of them will find green, and then they're attracted to green, and then they're on food again.
Mm-hmm.
And start a new colony. And in part, you know, they can start a colony. They don't need a they don't always reproduce sexually. They might reproduce parthenogenetically.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a mate, you should just have virgin birth. So they're all kinds. So everything is related to getting to a good place and taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
And so it varies. These stories are totally different from one animal to the other, but
yes,
ultimately they're all the same.
Well, and
idea behind it.
And the ladybird beetles, which, again, I live in an old house, so they,
mm-hmm.
I have lots of them at certain times of year inside the house,
yeah.
And they're always
yeah.
all together in one spot in the corner of a window, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you have a reason, a why behind that in the book. Maybe.
Well, it's, I mean, generally some of these noxious insects that advertise themselves with bright colors, they educate potential predators, and so if you're with others, and the bird was around to start picking off the insects, presumably, if it ate a couple of them and they tasted really bitter, then it's going to leave the rest alone. But if you
right.
were all alone, then they might give you a shot, and so with others you have safety. And a number of, insects have that strategy of gathering up into groups. For example, gyrinid beetles on the water surface, they have a very noxious poison that the fish try to eat them. And in fact, I had done some experiments with a colleague in Lake Itasca, Dan Vogt is his name, and we looked at... We released gyrinid beetles in the middle of Lake Itasca, and the fish would snap them up. But if the beetles came back into their big aggregations in the daytime, then in that area, the fish already apparently knew that you know, you don't touch these guys.
Doesn't taste good.
yeah. So again, there's aggregation, and they home in on each other and follow each other.
Right.
I should have mentioned that in this book. I don't know if I did or not, but they basically follow each other. So if there are more, then they follow them rather than one. And so they tend to come back either to the same place if others have stayed there, or they go into where others are going as well.
Mm. Right. So with the ladybird beetles, I mean, one smells bad and would taste bad if I chose to bite into
yeah.
it. But a lot
yeah.
really
yeah.
is like yeah. noxious, as you say.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Cumulative
exactly.
stinkiness.
Yeah. yeah.
So I see like the way that I guess my lens on the world is through plants. I look at plants, and then I
uh-huh.
learn other things through plants. But so what are
mm-hmm.
some of the ways that the homing instinct of insects or animals is connected to the mm-hmm. success or the failure of plants
mm-hmm.
then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think I should have maybe talked more about it. But basically, yeah, I mean, it's basically about getting to a good place. It's the same thing applies to plants. They have to be a place where they can get energy, which in this case is sunlight. They have to get water. They have to get nutrients. And they have to get away from their parents in some cases.
Yes,
for example,
indeed.
If you're a big tree, you need the light. You can't grow under it.
Right.
Not much of a chance. So we're talking about dispersal. The destination has to be a good one, but it's not predetermined. So there's a lot of chance involved in getting there, and the main thing is to get away. And with many seeds, some of them find that place.
Right, find a place.
So it's finding a good place, and so it's not migration, because that we think of it as one specific direction. This can be, this is, so we have the dispersal by aphids, for example, which is sort of like a plant.
Mm-hmm.
But it serves the same function as migration. And so in plants, of course, we have, you know, those like poplars or dandelions who the seeds are blown by the wind.
Right.
And eventually settle. Or we have mechanical dispersal like burrs, burdock, and seeds that stick to fur and get carried around. Or, you know, what I had been talking about in the book was with chestnut trees, with nuts, which are dispersed by animals. So they basically take advantage of being food. Some of them sacrifice this food for dispersing. And the jays, for example, and squirrels will hide the seeds away from the source. And and so they get to a good place. And the chestnuts that I had in my forest here, I was really surprised because I could find out exactly where they came from because I planted the trees
right
together, so I knew how far they traveled. I don't have the real distance in my head right now, but measured them all, and it's I think it was close to half a mile or something like that.
Right, with the help of the jays or the squirrels, as you say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we only have about 2 minutes or 3 minutes left, and I just want to ask you about the wonderful chapter called Home Crashers, which is delightful. And, you know, I have a lot of companions in and around my old house and my stone foundation and so forth. And who's currently living with you? Who's, you said the I'm not being personal, I'm sorry. But you were hoping the flicker might return. But in your house now or around your house, who are the current companions?
Well, they're not bed bugs and mites or fleas, but...
oh, good.
They are mice and cluster flies.
Yes,
and ladybird beetles.
Mm-hmm.
Ladybird beetles, mm-hmm. and cluster flies, but they're leaving right now. They only want to stay in the wintertime.
Yes.
And now they get out. So, and there are other... I don't know. Like you said, the Phoebe is a home crasher, but they are welcome ones. So some are more welcome than others. And certainly the flicker who built a nest in my wall was a home crasher. In fact, I chainsawed out on the wall on the other side so I could watch the nest. So they were a very welcome guest.
Oh, it's like an ant farm, except it's that you can watch, except it was flickers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, I'm so happy to speak to you, to hear your voice, because I've heard your voice through your books for so many years, as millions of other people have. And I want to thank you, and I'm going to be buying some extra copies of The Homing Instinct to give away. And I wish you and your chestnuts and your flicker and everyone a good season up there this year in Maine. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon. And thanks to all the rest of you for joining me, too. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com, of course, or on Facebook, facebook.com/awaytogarden.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.